Things called telephones and radios. Gauntlet did not relish the thought of a helicopter ride back to Scotland, then the palaver bumming another plane ride out to the island. There are reasons. Come on, kid, what's going on? Not yet. Tell me, or I'll walk out on this now. I'll go to Glasgow with Hillary and never return. I'm only in this for the fun of it. Don't need you to do the prima donna bit. A pause as Gauntlet sucked in air. I was with Scott just after the war. He's got other little helpers. There's a corporal who's in the same mob, and he's here. Novice master. It's like bloody old home week, Kit.
Palfrey hunched his shoulders against the cold and gave Charlie a fast sideways look.
Something's wrong, Kit muttered. Can't put my finger on it, but maybe I shouldn't have brought the scrolls to this place. Seemed best there with Gregory here and all. The girl, Hillary, she's working for you.
I told you.
I checked that with her.
Of course. Tell her you remember Chris the Lizzie pilot.
Chris the Lizzie pilot?
Should do the trick. Yes.
Gauntlet turned to his right and caught sight of Father Gregory Scott, head half bowed, face set and impossible to read, as his novice master, Father Benedict, grim-visaged death on wheels, talked at him 19 to the dozen, his mouth moving as though he had to enunciate with exceptional care, like talking to someone who had to lip-read, face within inches of Gregory's. As before, Gauntlet realized that this was not a new scene, but something he'd already experienced in the distant past. Something in the past mattered to someone, Gregory Scott for one, and the former corporal, Knight, Colin Knight. As Charlie took in the tableau, so the years again rolled back, and he recalled an autumn afternoon out in the camp for displaced persons near Frankfurt. Time was peeled back from Gregory Scott's face, and Charlie saw him as he had been in the early 1950s. With the memory, other facts crowded in. He'd not thought of those days for many years. Now he remembered details long forgotten. Several things swam back into his mind with such sharpness that Charlie was even ready to question the facts. Were these real? He asked himself. Are the memories accurate? Did these things really happen as I recall them now? Was Gregory Scott truly as I recollect? Or is this simply a muddle of facts inaccurately dragged back from wherever they've been lying dormant?
I'll go to Glasgow, see she's okay.
Gauntlet looked into Kit Palfrey's eyes, saw that little worm of treason move, then vanish.
I'll make a couple of phone calls while I'm there.
Pause, a slow count to six.
Kit, has this got to do with the efficacy of Father Gregory's religious beliefs?
Maybe.
Give me the Romeo fellow's number. I'll be back as soon as possible.
Palfrey rapped out a number, and Gauntlet fed it into that area of his mind equipped with a mnemonic used to remember numbers.
Get me some more pages, Charlie snapped back. I'll have time on my hands. Time to read. Pass them on.
Palfrey gave a little, almost insubstantial, nod. When Gauntlet returned to the injured Hillary, he found that she'd recovered consciousness enough to talk a little. She could not use one leg. The left arm and shoulder gave much pain. Her chest hurt, she said, and her head was still fuzzy. She sounded weak and miserable, not together, frightened. The Father Superior said he would be happier if they could get the girl inside, out of the biting wind. To that end, he was already organizing some of the younger monks under Father Benedict, who seemed wary of Gauntlet. Wary, shifty, sharp, and unforgiving. Charles did not take to the novice master, and the feeling was obviously mutual. He wondered if the man recognized him from the past. There were so many pictures of that time crowded into his head. Major Gregory Scott, the sinister Corporal Knight, the dead Colour Sergeant Hammer, and the massive brick wash house that was Corporal Day, and was probably somebody completely different now. Brother Simon arrived with four other young, capable and muscular novices carrying a canvas stretcher. Father Benedict took charge, instructing them on the art of lifting an injured person. Charlie reflected on the novice master's abrasive personality, magnified by a disagreeably harsh nasal voice, which had that astringent quality specifically designed to grate and rattle the nerves. Charlie also noticed that two of the younger monks wore a single stud in the left ear. A small cross hung from the studs. Surprised, he saw that Brother Simon was wearing a keeper in a recently pierced earlobe. In spite of all this, the younger monks were remarkably gentle and efficient. Hilary was obviously in great pain, yet they managed to make her comfortable on the stretcher, and carried her into the warmer gatehouse. Charlie's overnight bag was still there, and he made a weak joke about not yet having checked into his cell. The whole time he was very conscious of Father Benedict's eyes on him, drilling into the back of his skull. If looks could cripple, he would be on crutches for the rest of his life. Turning suddenly, he saw Benedict move quickly from beside Hilary, where a second before he'd been trying to reach under her body. For the first time, Charlie noticed that she was lying on a large shoulder bag, the strap of which was slung around her neck. Just over an hour later, as Gauntlet continued to question his memory of times long past, the helicopter arrived. Kit Palfrey sidled up, handing a file folder to Charlie, slipping it to him in an almost covert manner. So they chopped up into the scudding clouds, bouncing around like a fairground ride, finally making Glasgow in the late dark afternoon, after a bumpy, noisy, and ragged kind of journey. It was drizzling, a fine, almost cloudy mist soaking everything, and Charlie rode in the back of the ambulance with Hilary. He had some vague idea about asking her what she really did for Palfrey as well as Fly, but she'd been in agony on the flight, and they'd given her a strong, pain-killing injection that moved her a long way from consciousness. In the hospital, he waited for over an hour in a crowded casualty department, where young doctors and students battled anxiously against a tide of injured drunks, idiot driving accidents, bits of domestic abuse, assorted wounds, and sudden illnesses. The young housemen and casualty staff, though dedicated, had the look of shell-shocked officers. Gauntlet had seen those faces years before in the streets of Berlin, and in that DP camp near Frankfurt. Eventually a doctor sought him out, a harassed girl who looked about 15 years old, and wore a badge that said she was Dr. P. Pippet. Her bruised eyes indicated that she'd been working for too long without a break. "Mr. Gauntlet, you came in with Miss Cook, the airplane accident."
"Sure." Good way to describe Hilary, he considered. Hilary, the airplane accident.
"She's going to be okay." The doctor flicked a strand of rogue hair out of her eyes. "There's a compound fracture to her leg, broken arm, dislocated shoulder, we've put that right, 4 ribs, and concussion. We'll have to keep her in for a few days. Should be longer, but we can't spare the beds. We run out so quickly these days. Beds, I mean. I presume you can look after her when she comes out?"
"I'm not even a close friend, Doc. Just happened to be around when the accident..."
"Oh." For a moment the child doctor was nonplussed, but she recovered quickly. "Oh, well, don't worry, we'll talk to her, fix something." She gave him a little twinkle with her eyes and the corners of her mouth, then turned and hurried away, a medical fireman trying to extinguish a 4-engine blaze with a glass of water. To himself, Charles thought, "Thanks a bunch, Pippa Pippet." He checked on visiting eyes, was told any time, and the ward to which Hilary had been admitted, C7. Then went outside to use his mobile to book himself a room at the Central, before taking a cab off to the ubiquitous Chip, one of his favourite Glasgow haunts, for an early dinner. The serving staff were all young and helpful, as were most of the diners. He found it refreshing, particularly after Ring Morocco in the monastery. He recalled someone once telling him that monks were often like manure, because they did most good when they were spread over a wide area, and smelled when lumped in one place. He did not suppose the members of the Order of St. Jerome would see it like that. He grimaced, realizing glumly that he would be stuck in Glasgow for at least 24 hours. He'd begun to regret this involvement. After all, there was little in it for him. Charlie Gauntlet made a point of keeping clear of people whom he had known during his long, and for the most part bizarre, time with what was generally known in government circles as the office or the firm. Now, in the privacy of his hotel room, as he nursed a glass of passable Zinfandel, he dialed the number of an old acquaintance with whom he'd spent many secret years.